Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.4C. If you like fan fiction about Michigan State football, this is the podcast for you. Third part of our preview spectacular would not be complete without an immediate listing of our sponsors, Seth.
No. I needed 3 seconds to get there.
I said immediate.
Our sponsors, I can do it from my head. Ready? Underground Printing and the Bow Store, our presenting sponsors, our associate sponsors, our Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, University of Michigan Alumni Association, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Box, and Information Entropy.
Oh, wow. You really just did that off the top of your head.
No, I got to the list in the middle of it.
You could have played it off,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you could have just been like, yeah, I have a photographic memories. Deal with it.
No, I got to the list at about Residence Inn, and then I remembered we have the Alumni Association events coming up this week. So if you're listening to this podcast, I think the Chicago one has already happened, but next Monday you can be on the MGO podcast if you do the District of Columbia one.
So those are online because of COVID, of course. So we should talk about a schedule format, whether this is actually going to get off the ground and happen. Obviously, Michigan is going to play 9 regular season games, 8 regular season games, and then you get the bonus game at the end. No bye weeks, and also no wiggle room because the playoff field gets announced the day after the Big Ten championship game. So any delays are cancellations, and I think
we're going to see those.
I think the Big Ten is doing the logical thing here. And they're going to have to really test their asses off. And one good thing about this is with the testing, you're probably not going to have instances where, like you've seen in the Big 12 and the SEC, where entire position groups get wiped out.
Yeah, you're going to catch it several days earlier than they're catching it now.
Right.
Which is a huge deal with this.
Unless, they all live in the same house, which is definitely a thing right. That happens.
Yeah.
But then you're going to get clusters of like 4 guys or 6 guys, and I think you're going to be able to get through a season with certain guys missing time, but not entire position groups. The problem is Big Ten has a mandatory 21-day sit out for anyone who comes down with COVID. So if anyone gets it, they're out for at least 3 weeks.
Well, and plus, if you get, a couple different waves of it come through, then those absences could add up, and then suddenly you're looking at, because I believe they also have, if you have a 5% positive rate on your team, that's just kind of it for you. you're not playing that week, so. When you include that there are 14 teams involved in this.
And one of them is Rutgers.
Yeah, and one of them is Rutgers. Another one, we call their fans cooler poopers. And another one is Michigan State. Like, am I super optimistic that they're going to thread this needle? Not really.
Well, the message board had some concern that there was a lot of false positives, but they just take another test, right?
Yeah, they're not going to hold someone out on that test. They're going to give them a PCR test after the point of contact test.
Yeah, that's already come up in the NFL.
The PCR test doesn't take that long, so you can get a positive test on Friday morning, immediately take a PCR test, and then you'll have results by Saturday. So I don't think that there's going to be a high rate of people being unnecessarily held out. But where are COVID cases spiking? College towns. So,
right.
One good thing is that in Michigan's case specifically, it seems like they've been responsible. You know, you see the athletic...
With the football program.
Yeah.
The university itself.
We should clarify that.
Let me clarify. The athletic department, they do their tests, they put out the numbers, and I think they had 12 positive tests for the entire department over the past couple weeks. And that's been...
They're not doing the LSU thing where it's like, I think we're going for herd immunity now.
Well, their herd immunity...
I hope that's a thing.
Herd immunity got them debilitated by whoever they played, I forget.
They've lost to Mississippi State and somebody else they should not have lost to.
There's your herd immunity. Herd immunity is the worst term in the English language because it sounds like you did something great, right? It's like, oh, we got the herd immunity. We did a really good job. And it's like, no, you just let everybody get infected.
You did the laziest and worst thing.
And people are like, oh, we need to go for herd. You don't need to go for herd immunity. You just wander around living your stupid life the way you live it currently.
It sounds like Dan Mullen did a quick heel turn on going for herd immunity after losing a road game in front of a crowd. He's pushing for full capacity Florida crowds at the Swamp.
The Swamp!
Because there was too much crowd noise at Texas A&M for Florida not to just gack up a game they shouldn't have lost because they're the better team.
I mean, that wasn't a full stadium either. It was like...
No!
It's like 10,000, 20,000 people.
But it's the Aggies, so that's a very organized 10,000 to 20,000 people.
If you want to get 10,000 people, get some A&M
fans.
That
yelling is coordinated. But at least, one good thing about, I think, most of the states that the Big Ten is playing in is we're not going to see the thing that we just talked about where they're discussing putting everybody in the stadium.
Well, I think that was roundly rejected.
it was, but I mean, but they're still like, watching the games going on in Florida and Texas and a couple other states, you see those crowds and you're like, I'm deeply uncomfortable with this situation, especially the student sections.
Yeah.
You know, what's insane is I did that article on 1918, which is also played during a pandemic, and, you know, there's photos of fans in 1918. They're all wearing masks. They're not social distancing well, but they're at least wearing masks. So we're doing worse than people in 1918 did. They didn't know what a virus was in 1918.
Not technically true, but but yeah, that's a bummer.
But they weren't really aware of how it spread.
Yeah.
And yet they still wore the masks. Anyway.
Anyway.
So that there's definitely a needle to thread here.
Yeah,
for the Big Ten.
And when you have cancellations, because there are going to be cancellations, you have to go to, I guess, a winning percentage format, and then which cancellations happen. Like if you miss your game against Ohio State versus you miss your game against Rutgers, like that could be. What Michigan should do is they should just win all their games before Ohio State, and then. Herd immunity their asses.
No.
COVID. We can't COVID.
COVID.
We COVID
it
out.
We COVID-ed it. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
Live in this town, dang it.
So that's all. That's like the second bad idea of this preview section.
We do have a hot take segment coming up in this podcast.
I guess I already did it. I got my plan for the season. All right. do we have any other COVID-related skepticism to deliver before we switch over to actually looking at the teams?
I just want to talk about that they should definitely keep this ninth game idea. Like, I would much rather see than like just Ohio State play Wisconsin at the end of every year. Like
the last place game is something that needs to stay no matter what.
Yes,
I actually do not care about the games in the middle. Just the first place game and the last place game. Those need to stay.
I've been on about this forever, though. Play the best games that weren't played at the end of the season. Every year, you get all these Big Ten games that weren't played, and you're like, man, I would have watched, an Iowa-Michigan game to see who's better between those two.
You had to say that? At least make it a Michigan Stadium, for the love of God.
I mean, last year's game was 10-3, not exactly a...
Yeah, well...
What's the most watchable Michigan-Iowa game you can remember?
It was the worst possible example I could come up with. I apologize.
The answer to that question is 1997, and that watchability also included Terror.
It's true.
So
I was thinking Iowa Penn State originally. It was what I was about to start saying, and then I remembered that they usually play like 2-0 games.
Yeah, they played an infamously terrible game.
Those are like the worst possible game you can play. So
you need to go.
Yeah.
It's the Big Ten. We're watching it because it's funny, not because it's good.
You're like in full Costanza mode with your opinions right now, where you just need to take them and do an entire 180 on them, and then you can offer your opinions.
Before we go completely off the rails, the other thing I want to mention related to the COVID stuff is it does throw like all of the preseason predictions into a certain amount of flux, because you just do not know when a player or position group from a certain team is going to get hit in a way that might really, really impact them. Like, we're all assuming Ohio State is a juggernaut, but if they lose Justin Fields for whatever reason, that totally changes the outlook for that team, because they do not have a backup quarterback, really, because nobody does anymore. So I think that's worth mentioning when we're making all these, as we're about to head into a bunch of specific predictions about the other teams in the conference.
All right, we'll keep it to vague predictions on the other side of this break.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores. Not because you didn't love them, but just because you felt too weak to be strong. You couldn't bear to see someone who prided themselves on the strength to feel weak. The cruelty of randomness holding for ransom their life and their fate and their dreams. You see that they're fighting and know that they're losing, but still you make jokes and you laugh. Cause you know despite all the sadness that you better get the good times while they last. Now every new word that they speak, you are already feeling like it's in the past. And when they are gone, you just try to move on, cause the memory's hurting too bad. I've grown up so much and I wonder who you'd have become if you stuck for a while. Just know that I love you, your brain ain't forget you. Now when I remember, I smile. But I guess I'd say I'll see you soon.
I see you soon.
But the truth is that I see you now.
I see you now.
Still talk to you like you're around.
Like you're around.
But I guess I'd say you left too soon.
You left too soon.
But the truth is that you never left.
You never left.
Cause I never let myself forget.
Never forget.
So So we'll start with the Big Ten West, which has 7 teams in it. We're going to go in approximate order of finish. Who's the worst team in the West now? I don't know. Is it still Northwestern?
It could have been Northwestern, but Jalen Ramsey transferred.
Jalen Ramsey would have been a hell of a pick. Yeah.
Peyton Ramsey, the light-armed Indiana quarterback, transferred over
but
there.
Functional
light-armed.
Yeah, that's much more important than the light-armed thing when it comes to Northwestern. This dude has actually proven he can play quarterback in the Big Ten at a pretty decently high level. He was a top-5 quarterback in the conference last year.
Yeah, and he transfers over because it's Penix time in at Indiana, and now he's at Northwestern. The problem is, does he have any receivers? And then they still have Isaiah Bowser at running back. He's okay. You know, they have Patty Fisher. They have a lot of guys who have been in the same defensive system forever. They fired Mick McCall. You know, I don't know how much...
Which has to be a plus for that offense.
But year one...
Do you come back from Mick McCall in one year, though?
New coordinator. Ramsey's a major upgrade, but...
The new coordinator they brought in kind of walked into a similar situation where he had 1 year at Boston College, which is another offense that seems perpetually stuck in the mud, and he took them from 88th to 44th in S&P Plus in 1 year.
Well, that kind of improvement is definitely on the table because you're going from Hunter Johnson, who may literally have averaged 4 yards an attempt last year, to...
Yeah, I do not have the SP Plus ratings up at the moment, but wherever Northwestern is starting from, it's almost certainly significantly worse than where Boston College was starting from when Bajakian took them over.
Yeah, I remember there was a period midseason where I really liked watching Northwestern because there was a dead certainty that no touchdowns would be scored. And then they scored a touchdown, and I immediately lost interest.
Oh, yeah, Northwestern shutout watches is amazing. They were 123rd in offense last year.
I just looked up Hunter Johnson, who literally averaged 4.0 yards an attempt.
You gave him too much credit.
I got it exactly correct.
Wasn't that guy a 5-star coming out of high
school,
too?
He played
Clemson recruit Hunter Johnson.
He played Brandon Peters in that high school game we were all hyped about because it was like 5-star Clemson recruit Hunter Johnson versus Brandon Peters, and Brandon Peters looks a lot better than this guy. Mm-hmm. Accurate.
True. We will get to the Illinois section.
A lot of ramifications for that Illinois-Northwestern game at the end of the year.
Which I think is a good lead into just talking about Illinois, because I assume that the other team down at the bottom here?
Yeah, so, I mean, they have Brandon Peters back. They have a couple of... Imhotor Bebe went to the league, right?
No. Josh Imhotor Bebe is back for his senior
season.
Yeah.
I thought...
So yelling 500 and just punting it up to him is still definitely in play.
Oh, wow. That is... Of all the non-NFL draft entries, maybe they didn't rate him very highly. I don't know how, but...
He was a USC guy. Like, he was...
Yeah, he's a transfer from USC, and then...
Yeah.
No, they're getting another year of him, and that's a boon for Brandon Peters. Unfortunately, I think we're overlooking the biggest Illinois story here, which is that Lovie Smith shaved his beard.
Oh, it's over. We put him last.
They're doomed.
So yeah, Northwestern's coming out on top.
Doomed.
Sorry.
Illinois does get that that tight end who transferred from Georgia, who was ineligible
Luke
last
Ford.
Year. Yeah, Luke Ford.
Oh, yeah, that was a really brutal NCAA ruling.
Yeah, because he was like 2 miles outside the radius and everybody else is getting waivers because they heard someone say something nasty to them on the bus.
Right, and he did transfer because of his family. So like that was the closest school he could go to.
Well, I mean, the thing about Illinois is last year their defense was just beyond terrible. I think we all remember Michigan playing them and they just didn't set the edge all day.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be, like, Lovie Smith is a defensive coach, and so it's a little worrisome when, like, your defensive guru cannot field a defense that's even passable.
Yeah. Good news for them. They're first in the Big Ten West, alphabetically.
bad news, 92nd in offense.
Next up, probably Nebraska, you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's upside for them, and there's also just... the Scott Frost era.
Well, so they also got absolutely boned by the schedule, where it's like they're
that's right.
Yeah, I would call it getting Michigan because what they ended up getting was Michigan's schedule.
Well,
and they asked for it.
Their crossover games are Ohio State and Penn State. They open at Ohio State. They get Wisconsin. Like, even if...
You wanted football, you got it, Scott. I mean,
even if they're...
And he's complaining. They're screaming about this.
Even if they're a better team, it's going to be tough for it to show up much in the record. Because they got to go to Iowa. They got to go to Purdue. They got Minnesota to finish. They only really have two games where I think you're going to say that they're clearly favored. That's Northwestern and Illinois.
Yeah, you're also looking at an offense where Adrian Martinez has been pretty up and down after getting some like dark horse Heisman consideration, and then they lost J.D. Spielman, who was their leading receiver. They haven't really had a standout running back in a while, so like the best offensive weapon on that team is Wandale Robinson, who's kind of a hybrid slot guy.
He's pretty solid, though. He's a good player.
He's good. It's just hard to build a whole offense around that.
I mean, the thing about Martinez is I think we might underrate him a little bit because he got on the field immediately as a freshman. Last year was a true sophomore year. Their offensive line has been a real problem for them. I mean,
he shares a last name with Taylor Martinez.
Yeah, that's really it. That's honestly a problem.
I think that's like half the problem for the guy in terms of his reputation. But like, he definitely wasn't as bad as some people thought last year compared to expectations. No. He just didn't live up to the dark horse Heisman.
Yeah, I mean, he completed almost 60% of his passes, 7 point yards an attempt, not enough touchdowns, 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, got knocked out a lot. I mean, that was one of their main problems, is that whenever Martinez went out, they really had nobody. So he's got to be able to stay healthy, and is that line going to be able to do that is an open question.
Otherwise, you're recalling the Riker Fife days.
Yeah, Riker Fife, man. And then on defense, like, they've just been so terrible for so long. It's hard to, like, predict.
Muster any optimism for that?
They get good recruits. They're actually, like, the fourth best or third best every year in recruiting, and they've gotten, like a bunch of four stars.
Some of those guys leave, though, pretty quickly. They have not had a great track record of actually holding on to the like four-star California recruits that they bring in. They do have DiCaprio Boodle, who we need to mention by name because he is their best defensive player and is named DiCaprio Boodle. He's a pretty versatile cornerback who might end up being their slot guy. Other than that, though, their defense stinks.
Yeah, they like to play a 3-4 with like safeties on the outside, which you can get away with if you're Alabama because your safeties are 6'2", 212 pounds, and, you know, five stars. But the discount Alabama defense doesn't really work.
Real discount.
Yeah. Well, especially once you're in the Big Ten, where, like, a lot of teams still run power and will, you know, throw two tight ends at you.
Next up, Iowa. They replace Nate Stanley.
Are we really this high on Purdue?
Oh.
They got Rondale Moore back.
Oh, it's just Rondale Moore and some guys. One team has Rondale Moore, the other one doesn't have Rondale Moore.
That was fair.
Pretty much my entire rationale here.
You know what? Let's roll with it. I'm good with that.
Iowa does have Amir Smith-Marset, who is
pretty darn good himself.
Skinny and good, yeah. I'll say he's an excellent kick returner and very underrated as a receiver, too.
Yeah, Oliver Martin transferred to Iowa because it was like, all right, if I can't get on the field at Iowa, I mean, their wide receivers have been terrible for so long, and he can't get on the field at Iowa, so he transfers to Nebraska. So,
which is on a direct line, by the way. If you go from Ann Arbor to Iowa City to Lincoln, you're still going pretty much straight. And if you continue that, he'll end up at Air Force and, I think, USC at the end.
Did you draw this on a map?
I did. You can actually keep going and go all the way to Australia, so if you want to know where his career is going to end up.
Aussie rules, baby.
Yep.
Start punting that ball. Iowa does lose a first-round offensive tackle, which I think is important to mention. They did get one back, but, I mean, Tristan Wirfs was, he's already making a big impact in the NFL, so that's a hit for an offense that, you know, wasn't exactly crushing it, even with two NFL-quality offensive tackles.
I'm not going to worry about Iowa's offensive line because they've replaced with walk-ons and three stars. And then, you know, Alaric Jackson is maybe the best left tackle in the conference.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And I think
they did lose a ton on defense, though, as well.
Yeah.
They've lost three of their four-star defensive linemen, including A.J. Epinesa, who's was right up there with anybody other than Chase Young among defensive ends in the Big Ten last year. Their leading tackler is gone, Christian Welch. The maligned but actually decent, it turned out by the end of his career, Michael Ojemudia, who is playing in the NFL right now, left. And Geno Stone was an early entry at safety, so they lost their best player at every level of the defense.
Yeah, Geno Stone was a weird decision for NFL early entries.
He did not get drafted, I don't think.
No, but he was a good player. Like I was going over the UFRs, and there was one point where I'm just like, this is an incredible Geno Stone tackle that would be a +3 if I was grading Iowa. And he was, you know, he's going to be a big loss for them. But they are very plug and play on defense because they play that cover two system that kind of covers up for athleticism deficits. They don't change anything. They are just kind of who they are. So I don't think their defense is going to be a major problem. And then on the other side of the ball, I think we're a little bit overlooking Tyler Goodson, who was a freshman last year who looked excellent at running back. Like,
that's fair.
He really popped as a guy who is getting the traditional Kirk Ferentz, I'm not going to play you because you're a young running back.
On the flip side, though, they lose Nate Stanley, who's been at least a kind of steady quarterback for them. You know, he wasn't ever necessarily special unless you were Todd McShay on the right day. But
there's no question about Spencer Petras stepping in, right? Like, that's been a pretty direct line.
Yes, he's
a four-star quarterback in Iowa, I imagine. Yeah, that's been pretty seamless.
So they will have an Iowa quarterback again.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you replace a quarterback, there is going to be some uncertainty, but you have a locked-in guy who's a pretty decent recruit. That's a good situation for them. It's, you know, a good situation that because of Kirk Ferentz means that they're going to, like, win a game by scoring 14 points, but that's what they do. So
it's going to be Iowa.
Yeah. Well, this is an odd question for Iowa. Do they have a tight end?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I assume so.
We've been assuming, but like they haven't recruited any. So last year, you know, they were throwing a freshman Sam Laporta out there. Their other tight end last year was Nate Weeding, who is like I think he's graduated. So, you know, unless Laporta pops this year, you know, it could be a weird tight endless year, which might help their offense because they throw it to the tight end on outlets so darn often. Like maybe they actually will throw it downfield to Amir Smith-Marset.
Speaking of hyphenated names, Purdue - Boilermakers. I'm sorry. So Purdue, of course, brings back Rondale Moore, but that's not the only extremely talented guy they have. David Bell was an excellent wide receiver for them a year ago in Rondale Moore's absence. They have Karlaftis on the defensive line. They get back Lorenzo Neal off injury this year. So they have a couple of guys who are among the more talented players in the conference, even if you exclude Moore. So do they have the depth? Are they going to have an offensive line that can protect the quarterback?
Do they have a quarterback? Because Elijah Sindelar graduated and his backups were bad?
Well, I mean, Plummer was actually okay last year. So,
and then he broke his ankle.
Right, but he's back. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, 6.7 yards an attempt, 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Not great stuff, but you know, he was a freshman. He's going to be a sophomore this year, and they
brought in a UCLA grad transfer who did not have a very good track record, which to me spoke to like they're not super confident in the options they've got on there to the point where they really wanted a 3-man competition.
Yeah, I mean,
with Aiden O'Connell,
you know, maybe that's just a precaution because it kind of feels like, you know, Plummer's going to be the guy, and just having Moore around, it's got to be worth a yard per attempt, right?
Yeah, you'd think so. I'd just give it to him and let him run.
So, I think they have a shot at a decently efficient offense. You know, Brohm is a guy who has been very innovative at his time as a head coach, and I think he's a good bet to get the most out of his talent. And then it's like, okay, they have a defensive line. I think that's going to be a pretty, like, one of the upper echelon defensive lines in the conference, and it's just like, what is...
They also hired Bob Diaco.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no.
So, they're shifting to the Diaco Pier 3-4, which at least Neil is pretty cut out for as a nose. Oh. But in addition to being coached by Bob Diaco, they are undergoing a bit of a scheme change.
Oh no!
So that throws some of the things into question in terms of produce quality.
I mean, Diaco will give you everything underneath, but like, you know, at least they're not going to break down every single play
this is
anymore.
So depressing. I was so hype about Purdue, and now nothing can be done about
Bob Diaco. And they're also, I mean, the line looks okay, but the second level's pretty worrisome. They had a JUCO transfer flip his commitment from Louisiana Tech, where Diaco had been when Diaco took the job. So they're a little thin at linebacker, and when you're running a 3-4, it's not great. There's probably one guy in that linebacker unit who's going to be playing a similar spot that he did in 2019 in any major role.
And that was the strength of the team last year, was their linebacker, other than Rondale Moore, obviously.
And then their defensive backs obviously struggled quite a bit. And I guess the plus with Diaco is you're going to, you know, play soft over the top, but this was not a good secondary.
Yeah, one thing that Purdue has going in its favor is their crossover games are Rutgers and Indiana.
That is
so
nice.
So we've done this before where it's like Purdue's crossover games are terrible. Maybe they're going to be a contender and then they go like 5-7. But this seems like a different situation where, like, if they are able to pull an upset at either Wisconsin or Minnesota, they could really be in the conference championship picture, just because, like, and they get Iowa at home, like their next most intimidating game, except for the two contenders in the division, is probably the Indiana game.
Yeah, they could be about as good as Nebraska and have like a 3-win difference, 4-win difference at the end of the season in a 9-game schedule.
So let's address the two top teams kind of collectively, because I think they're pretty close. Wisconsin and Minnesota are ranked in the AP poll. Wisconsin, of course, is Wisconsin. Minnesota brings back their quarterback. They bring back Rashad Bateman. They bring back most of their offensive line. They have an RPO-based system that they have down. Like the sheer number of easy throws that – it's not Zach Anakstad anymore. Who is it?
Tanner Morgan.
Tanner Morgan, yeah.
That Tanner Morgan just tore it up without having to make that many difficult throws. It's, you know, he's a system quarterback, and that's a difficult thing to say in 2020 because everybody's a system quarterback. But Minnesota really did a spectacular job of setting him up for success. And there's always the worry there – that a system gets downloaded in year two and you have to evolve it and it gets tougher to actually sustain that success. But 66% completion rate, 10.2 yards an attempt, 30 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. This was as a sophomore for Tanner Morgan. I mean, that's production that you would be delighted to get from anybody. And he was, you know, a 3-star Houdette sophomore that they did a superior job with.
Yeah, one thing on the coaching side of this is Kirk Chiaraca, who was flex.
Chiaraca.
Kirk was flex right-hand man and offensive coordinator. He got snatched up by Penn State, and they replaced him with Mike Sanford Jr.,
who is not Mike Sanford Sr., who used to be the offensive coordinator under Urban Meyer.
And the younger Sanford, he had like one okay year at Boise State, parlayed that into the job at Notre Dame, did kind of okay there, and then was the head coach in Western Kentucky and was an absolute disaster there, to the point where he basically undid all the progress done by like Jeff Brohm and Bobby Petrino and Willie Taggart. So I assume with Fleck in charge that the offense is going to still look the same, but you might get a drop-off in play calling here.
Yeah, I want to note, too, that you know, this is true of most RPO teams, that they are actually much more run-heavy than people give them credit for. Like, I think people who see highlights of Minnesota are like, oh, there's another throw to Rashad Bateman. Oh, there's, you know, Tyler Johnson, who they have to replace. Don't realize how much of their offense is really, like, the defense is sitting back on those throws to make sure they're not easy for a while, and then they just get sick of waiting, and that's when they get the big play. But most of Minnesota's offense is going to be running behind, like, Daniel Faele, who's that 400-pound Australian tackle that they got.
Yeah, I just wrote up the enemy offensive lines post for the blog, and the Gophers, I think, other than their center, who's, I think, 305 pounds or somewhere in that range, there isn't a lineman smaller than 325, and all five of their starters return. They were pretty good at run blocking last year, and they've got Mo Ibrahim, who's one of the better backs in the conference, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he was stuck behind, you know, a couple great, really good backs, too, and Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, who came back last year after he got, I think, 2018, he had a 1,000-yard season. So Mo is definitely one of the more underrated guys, and with that big offensive line, that's what you have to stop. If you can push them back and put them to third and long, that's how you get them off the field.
Yeah, that's why their offensive system works so well. They have, like, they can't find tackles who can pass protect, so what do? They load up on the biggest dudes in the country and defy you to not take a step towards the line of scrimmage at a mesh point. And then if you do, well, you just got. So it's pretty clever. I enjoy watching them play. On the other side of the ball, you know, the standout aspect of the Minnesota defense is they have a couple of very good cornerbacks in Coney Durr and Benjamin St. Juice. A little bit of a knife twist there. But
particularly this year,
they've got a lot more questions, I think, on defense than they do on offense.
Yeah, losing Antoine Winfield Jr., that's somebody they're probably not going to be able to replace. That was the Big Ten defensive back of the year, safety who kind of lined up all over the place. They lost Carter Coughlin, who was their tackle for loss leader and a pretty legitimate edge rusher, a couple all-conference linebackers, and there are not necessarily obvious replacements there to step up. So, and this is a team that they finished 26th in defense last year, and that's the best they've finished under Flex. So it's not like they've had particularly great defenses to hang their hat on.
And the Coughlin loss is a big one because their defensive line does not create a lot of pass rush on their own, and he was kind of where it was coming from. So if they're not able to get to the quarterback, you know, Coney Durr is a good cornerback and St. Juste is as well, but you can outrun St. Juste, and Durr is a very small guy, and they don't have a lot else out there. So there's a lot of breakdown in Minnesota's defense once they don't get pass rush. And this year, I don't think they're going to get much of it.
Well, there's one guy who I think you're going to want to watch out for. I don't know how to pronounce this. Boye Mafe, who showed up on the freaks list that Felton puts out every year. He didn't really have a whole lot of contribution last year, but he's the kind of guy who could come out of nowhere and be that kind of edge terror. And I think Minnesota's going to have to try it with them. And they could get 8 to 10 sacks out of him if he's a strike. So that would be a big swing player for the whole division, I think.
Yeah, he had 3 sacks as like a pretty little used backup last year, stuck behind Coughlin. So there's a lot of upside, and obviously with the freaks list level athleticism, but he's also managed to turn a little bit of that in production already.
Wisconsin is, I don't, is there a Wisconsin?
What? I mean, they lost Jack Cohn, it seems like, for a while. So there is a little bit up in the air in terms of they had a very steady option at quarterback with a bit of a low ceiling. And now they're putting in the highest ranked quarterback they've ever brought in at Wisconsin. But he's in his second year, and he did not beat out Jack Cohn last year. So Graham Mertz adds a little bit more uncertainty to that offense, I would say. And that's a bit of an issue in a year where you're replacing Jonathan Taylor, who was incredible. And there are some backs in the running where you could see a guy emerge, but there is not an heir apparent like there usually is at Wisconsin.
They do have a Rutgers decommit, though, don't they?
They do.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so they'll be fine.
Or if he wasn't a Rutgers decommit, he at least was a running back from New Jersey that Rutgers was after very hard.
It counts. And they got a fullback, and they got Cole Van Lannen back, who is that left tackle who PFF adores, and more offensive line. Oh, Jake Ferguson back too, isn't he?
Yes.
Grandson of Barry Alvarez. So they don't really have very good receivers, especially with Quintus Cephus going to the Lions. Apologies to that guy. But, you know, Ferguson is... You know, Ferguson can be that chain mover that they need, and that's really kind of what all Wisconsin ever needs.
They're not going to start Garrett Groshek at running back, are they?
I mean, I doubt it. There's talk about him taking on a bigger role, but I would expect him to be the third down back again, because between Jalen Berger is the freshman who spurned Rutgers. They also have a four-star who was the top recruit in Wisconsin 2019, Julius Davis at running back. He had sports hernia surgery, so he took a red shirt last year, but that was not a sign of him not being ready to play. That was just him being hurt.
All right. Do we have a pick for this? Who you got?
Based on the defense, I would go Wisconsin.
Seth?
Yeah, I'm going Wisconsin just because, you know, I've watched Big Ten football the last 20 years.
I think I'm going to go to Purdue just because, I mean,
really?
They have more.
Even after the Bob Diaco revelation.
Like they have the most talent in the conference, in the division, I should say.
Like
two good wide receivers. I think you're going to get a lot of improvement from Plummer going from a freshman to a sophomore. They have the two best defensive linemen probably in this division. Like, I think they can put it together. And then you have that like schedule boost. Like they got to win at Wisconsin or Minnesota, and that's going to be kind of a tall order, but it's really hard to see them tripping up against anyone except maybe Iowa otherwise.
I mean, it happens every year that like there's somebody in the West that there's a good story for. Like Minnesota, we thought was last year.
They were a good team last year. Like
they were a good team, but then they come up against Wisconsin, and Wisconsin wins the West. It just always happens. And we didn't even like talk about Wisconsin's defense, but they return like their entire secondary, and they get Scott Nelson back, and they've got a great defensive nose tackle who was just a sophomore last year.
And their coaching has been awesome on that side of the ball.
I mean, you guys are right, but I just didn't want us all to pick Wisconsin.
That's fair. There was a shout out to Jason Kirk, Hail to the Victors contributor, who wrote a thing recently about how to not get memed if you're picking games on television, which is do not get screenshotted with everyone picking the same team that eventually gets upset. So we're porting that over to the podcast.
We are. All right, we're going to take a break and talk about the division Michigan happens to be in.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Well, the winds hit hell.
All right, so the Big Ten West is what we were talking about previously. We're not talking about the Big Ten East. Wow. Trying to pick the bottom team in this division is tougher than usual.
But there's... is there really an answer besides, like, the answer?
It's Rutgers, probably.
Yeah, because at least the other two programs have, like, if you squint, there's some upside. And with Rutgers, it's just... really hard to see.
All right, what's the nicest thing you can say about Rutgers going into this football season?
Michael Dwumfor can get upfield.
Isaiah Pacheco is a legitimate Big Ten starting running back.
Yeah, that's nice and accurate, I think. He's a solid player.
Yeah, unfortunately, they still averaged 4.1 sack-adjusted yards per carry with that guy because their offensive line is terrible. And they returned one starter from that offensive line.
And they got a grad transfer at quarterback, right?
Yes, from UCF, Noah Vedral. My nicest thing I was going to say, if Isaiah Pacheco wasn't there, is that Archer Sitkowski is not going to be their starting quarterback anymore.
Yeah, instead it's a guy who transferred away from Nebraska.
And then transferred away from UCF after Mackenzie Milton got hurt.
Yeah, that's not a whole lot better.
So, yeah, but he's not Archer Sitkowski.
That's correct. I see that Drew Singleton is not expected to start. Wow, that's tough to do.
Yeah, he's been in a battle forever with the other Mike, Tyshawn Fogg, who I think just beat him out. And then their weak side linebacker, Olakunle Olakunle Fadukasi. I spent so long preparing that one. For, I think, our MGO radio podcast last year against. And then Tyreek Maddox Williams. So their linebackers are terribly coached, but, you know, talented enough that, like, they could be better this year, I guess.
All right, that's way too much time spent on Rutgers.
Yep.
I think Maryland is next. They had, like, six guys opt out? And I think it matters whether.
You're giving Michigan State a lot of credit here, man.
If Talia.
Man, it's just tough with Maryland.
Isn't eligible. Did he get eligible yet or not?
Yeah, they've had Josh Jackson.
Jackson's gone.
If that was the best option last year, they lost Piggy as well. Tyler Dessou retired. Like, they are going through a Maryland quarterback year before the season even begins.
Well, they have that Legendre guy who played against us a little bit, who was...
Tagovailoa did get cleared,
did.
For the record.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe this is Michigan State. Let's make it Michigan State.
All right. Spicy.
So Michigan State went in for transfer quarterbacks and got none. They struck out on everybody they pursued. They pursued Ramsey. They pursued KJ Costello. So they're going into this season looking at Rocky Lombardi as their potential starter.
Or Theo Day, maybe?
Yeah, the guy who was behind Rocky Lombardi last year. Here are Rocky Lombardi's 2019 stats. 7 of 21 for 74 yards, 3.5 yards an attempt, 0 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions.
And he had a year of backing up prior to that that was similarly god-awful.
2018, 68 of 154. That's a 42% completion rate. 4.8 yards an attempt, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
And that's a decent sample size there.
That is a decent sample size. That was a decent sample size behind one of the worst offensive lines in the country.
I just did the enemy O-line rankings, and I came close to putting Michigan State behind Maryland and almost slipped them behind a Rutgers team that returns one starter.
So,
because Michigan State was way worse than Rutgers at blocking last year.
Also, they have a new coach. They have a new coach with a new system. Who didn't get a spring practice, who probably didn't get much of a fall practice because I think Michigan State has missed chunks of practice time because they had to quarantine because Harper's exists. So they're not only extremely talent deficient, but they're going to be one of the less organized teams in the conference, I believe.
And they did not get the offensive coordinator they want. They ended up having to bring over the guy that he had Colorado, who... inherited LaVisca Chenault and turn that offense into less than the top 25 offense.
Yeah, and Michigan State does not exactly have LaVisca Chenault out there. In fact, they barely have any receivers that were on the field last year.
They do have Jalen Reed, who is a pretty dynamic receiver for Western Michigan, who transferred and sat out last year.
They have a guy named Aubrey Dawkins, who is not that Aubrey Dawkins, but I'm going to pretend it is.
And then if anything happens to Elijah Collins, that would be a problem because he pretty much cleared out their entire running backs room.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the only player on their offense, so you'd be like, yeah, that guy's a legit upper echelon Big Ten player.
Yep.
Yeah, they did have another running back who was in the portal and came back out of it when he realized that he was number two, and number two running back is going to get carries, but...
It was Ironhead Hayward's kid, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, Connor Hayward.
I mean, he's just a...
He's a jag.
He's just a guy. There you go. On the defensive side of the ball, massive attrition. I think they lost, eight or nine starters? Like, you know, we keep a pretty close eye on what's going on over there, and the names on their defense, like, most of them you have not heard of yet. Like, I think the violent Panishuk is back.
Yeah. He's also known as the one who's not good.
You have Naquan Jones, who's still kicking around. I don't know how that happened. You know, and then it's like the occasional recruit you remember, Antoine Simmons, Kalen Gervin. But like they're turning over a massive amount of personnel. They kept their defensive coaching, so I think they'll be a little bit less prone to be a complete debacle. But, you know, there's no Willekes, there's no Raekwon Williams, there's no guy who stands out.
You know,
as
Michigan State
NFL
we've
player.
Discussed how deficient they are at wide receiver, and they still flip Julian Barnett to cornerback because they just need bodies there so badly that can actually play football.
I mean, that was always the plan. I think that he played receiver last year just to get him on the field.
Yeah, but that plan could have changed when he was one of their better receivers and then all their receivers left. And instead, they are still moving him to the defensive backfield because they definitely need him there too.
Right, yeah. And the plan was the plan because they did not have any guys after the ones who were graduating last year. And I don't think they expected to lose Josiah Scott to the NFL either.
Well, with air quotes. To further opportunities. Yeah, so if you do look at their wide receiver core, they brought back Jalen Naylor, Lores Nelson. They have some guys. They have that Western Michigan transfer, Jaden Reed, so they might be okay there, and moving him to corner, which is where he was rated as a recruit, makes sense. It's just, so instead of that guy practicing at corner all last year, he played wide receiver, and now he's
yeah, this is a team that just
lineup,
seems to be consistently patching holes because their recruiting has been way worse than it should be.
Yeah, and they're not going to get any immediate help from any of their freshmen, right? Like, they've done a good job historically of developing guys who are not particularly highly rated, but this is not a program that's going to be able to plug a hole with some guy who just showed up on campus.
Yeah, they're really pushing the not particularly highly rated thing in these last couple classes to maybe a new level, and also, you know,
yeah,
have turned over half their coaching staff.
Oh, and their recruiting has just absolutely fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, Kentucky has just annihilated them in Ohio, and it's tough to live as a Big Ten program when you're getting annihilated by Kentucky and Ohio.
I mean,
all right, is that enough, or do we want to?
They got a good kicker. Michigan State always has a good kicker. Oh wait, no, he's not a good kicker. Matt Coughlin missed 10 of his 32 field goals last year.
Oh yeah, he was like the most college kickers guy of last year because he was good prior to that. And then last year, he just melted down. So they've got that to look forward to. All right, we should move on to Maryland. They have...
Which we got a false start in on.
False start, but that's, you know, that's Maryland football. False starts.
Yeah, it works.
It's just hard to project anything but offensive disaster, even with Tagalova.
Not really.
Is that anywhere close to correct?
How have you not heard that name a gazillion times by this point?
So my brain does not work well when it comes to pronouncing things that I see. It's a
Tagovailoa. Anyway.
Anyway.
He has a target. He has Dante Demas, who is a guy who kind of popped last year.
He has two targets because they also brought in Rakeem Jarrett, who's a five-star freshman and, like, the reason that Mike Loxley is there, is to get guys like him on that team.
So he's got a target. He's got two targets. Does he have an offensive line in any way whatsoever? Historically, they've just run five guards out there and lived.
Yeah, and they lost their two best guards and also a guy who filled in and made starts at four different positions for them last year, which first of all tells you something about the state of Maryland's line heading into the season, even before that. And yeah, I do not, I do not expect them to be a good blocking team. They allowed the most sacks in Big Ten play last year, and they've kind of got two tackles where if you combined them, they'd sort of form like a tackle-sized and tackle athletic person, but instead they're either deficient in athleticism or size. So yeah, it's not looking great on that front, and they're probably relying on a freshman at running back, Penny Boone, out of Detroit, is possibly going to end up starting because their backfield got wiped out by two NFL departures. One of those should very much be in scare quotes for Javon Leak, but Anthony McFarlane left, and he was actually pretty darn good. Lorenzo Harrison had to take a medical retirement after his career kind of just kept going downhill from his freshman year. And Jake Funk, who'd been kind of effective as a backup, has torn the same ACL 2 years in a row. He's the presumed leader, I think, along with Tayon Fleet Davis, who's kind of more of a receiving back than anything else.
He's a jag, yeah. He's just a guy.
Yeah. So I'm expecting the freshman Boone to end up getting a decent amount of work in that backfield, and who knows how that'll turn out, especially behind that offensive line.
And Detroit guys like that guy a lot. Like, if everyone didn't have so many running backs right now, he'd be a guy that, like, Michigan and Michigan State wanted. Actually, I think Michigan State did want him. Sorry.
This is not going
to
be...
I have to believe MSU would have taken him.
This is not going to be a good football team, but my God, they've got some names.
They do.
Alawasian Oluwatami. That was probably not right.
You did a pretty good one on that one.
They're
Chigozium Okonkwo.
Yeah, that was the one I was looking at, the tight end.
That's amazing.
And that guy's probably starting.
They've also got a Ruben Hippolyte II and Ayinde Ile. Fanaje Goat. Ah, God.
Have we mentioned Ruben Hippolyte yet?
I just.
Okay. Sorry, the names are coming fast and furious.
Mosiah.
Jacorian Bennett.
Mosiah Nasili Kite. That's amazing. This is the best named team in the conference. No question.
I think they lost Fofi Bazzi, though.
They did.
And they also lost Piggy.
But even in the face of such damaging name departures, they persist.
I mean, the names that start with O alone, phenomenal. They got at least three top tier right there.
I think we've concluded our section on Maryland. Up next, Indiana. Michael Penix's health is pretty much the key to their season. He gives them an athletic ability that Peyton Ramsey did not. He can run. He's got a big arm. He's the kind of guy who could single-handedly lift Indiana into not contention for the division, but bowl contention, I guess.
And also bring a bit of the chaos back to their offense in terms of just the explosiveness. I mean, because he brings a vertical element that Peyton Ramsey didn't necessarily bring. Peyton Ramsey kind of belongs at Northwestern, it feels like. In terms of his propensity for taking the short pass. But they've got some interesting skill players. They've got Wap Fillier, who's really productive out of the slot. They need to find something on the outside, but they do have one of the better tight ends in the conference, and Peyton Hendershot, who is back on the team, even though he probably should not be, based on what he did in the offseason.
He got, like, no punishment for that, too. I think he was suspended for the part of the season that no one was practicing.
Yeah, he missed no practice.
Probably disclose what that is in case anyone listening doesn't know everything.
There was an incident that he pled down to misdemeanor criminal trespassing after facing multiple charges, including felony residential entry for basically stalking his ex-girlfriend.
All right, there you go. They do have Stevie Scott back as well, so he's not going to be Tevin Campbell, but he's an effective straight-ahead runner. good to pair with a mobile quarterback in a spread system.
Tevin Coleman.
Ah, right. Sorry. And their offensive line, who do they return on their offensive line? Doesn't look like...
Well, they lost Coy Cronk to Iowa, which is the weirdest transfer of the year.
No, it makes sense. Coy Cronk went down after four games last year. He wasn't very good, and the guy who stepped in, Matthew Bedford, was really dang good for a freshman at left tackle. So Coy Cronk was maybe not going to get his job back. Now that they also lose their center, Hunter Littlejohn, who's a multi-year starter.
He was pretty decent.
Every Michigan fan's least favorite Indiana lineman, Simon Stepaniak, also is gone. And he was a multi-year starter and a bit of a cheap shot artist, but also pretty good. Bedford was a real pleasant surprise for them last year. And the rest of the projected starters are at least in their fourth year on campus. So I think they should at least be okay up front. Now they don't have the... track record of a Wisconsin or their recruiting talent for that matter, but Indiana's been pretty decent up front for the last several years.
Yeah, so their offense should maintain at least decent, and they have got some upside if Penix really emerges. When this was the year he would do it, this is his third year on campus. He hasn't had a ton of experience because he's kind of been on and off because he's injured. So,
and he's put up great numbers when he's been out there.
He has. So that's one of the more important players in the conference just in terms of variability. On defense, they took a big hit when Marcelino Ball went out for the season. They're starting space backer, one of the better ones in the conference. They get Taiwan Mullen back, who was one of the better corners in the conference as a true freshman. They really just have been pulling out this one defensive back every 3 or 4 years who just doesn't belong on Indiana.
They're also amazing at finding defensive backs who break up a ton of passes and never catch them. He's following in the Noah Fant tradition here.
But the rest of their defense doesn't really have anyone who jumps out at you, and they were not at all good as a unit last year.
Yeah, it's a rough group. They had risen up to 25th in SP Plus, and you've got Tom Allen in there who's a defensive guy, and then they just plummeted down to 75th a couple years ago before bouncing back to 43rd. So that they've been kind of all over the place, and it's hard. I like their secondary a little bit, but they're like, I don't know how strong they're going to be up front.
I like that one linebacker, Micah McFadden, the middle linebacker. Another thing about their defense, though, is I think that they replaced their defensive coordinator and they hired from within, so they've got like a 30-year-old guy at DC
now. But is it a Tom Allen show? Like,
yeah, pretty much. I mean, this was a guy that they brought in as the linebackers coach and made him the youngest defensive coordinator in the Power Five last year. This is definitely Tom Allen's defense with an understudy. And I mean, when you look at this defense, they were god awful in sack rate, and that led to them being god awful at defending third downs, even with some pretty good pieces in the secondary. And there isn't really a guy rising up in that, especially on the defensive line, that makes me think they're going to get any sort of organic pass rush. And that's a problem in Tom Allen's scheme.
All right. So middling, possibly above 500 for Indiana this year. And then there's the three kind of big teams in the conference. We've already spent a lot of time discussing Michigan. I'm sure you know what our opinions are of Michigan. Penn State loses Micah Parsons to a COVID opt-out, which is probably the biggest COVID opt-out in the league.
One of the biggest in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, the size of a defensive end who can run like a linebacker, he's a crazy player. You mentioned, I think, Journey Brown on our first podcast is possibly the best running back in the league. They never really settled on a guy last year, and then Brown kind of forced them to make a pick. You get Sean Clifford back off okay year. You lose KJ...
Yeah, he's all right.
He's a person. You lose KJ Hamler. I think Freiermuth is back, though, right?
Yeah, Freiermuth, Baby Gronk, still needed a year before he was eligible for the draft, so he's back. They're a little light at receiver because Justin Shorter transferred to Florida, and he was a former five-star who hadn't really performed up to that level, but they were hoping for a breakout at some point. It never happened, so... They've got Jahan Dotson, who showed some number one option potential kind of in the KJ Hamler mold, where you're going to move him around the formation quite a bit. But he's the only returning wide receiver who had double-digit receptions last year. They also lost Mac Hippenhammer to a grad transfer to Miami, Ohio, and they lost the receivers coach as well. So there's it's going to be either like underwhelming upperclassmen or four-star freshmen out there to kind of fill out the receiving core. So they'll probably lean pretty heavily on that run game. But the good news for them is they have, in addition to Journey Brown, Noah Kane was really good before. He was looking like he was actually going to be the guy until he got hurt and kind of opened the door for Brown a little bit. And they keep bringing in dudes in recruiting as well. So they've got kind of a stable back there.
Yeah, they brought in, you know, your dude Kirk Shiraka from Minnesota. So I think you're going to see a lot better RPOs this year. They were already like a very RPO-oriented offense. But Ricky Ronnie always felt like he was kind of running somebody else's offense. Yeah. And now that he's gone, you know, I think Shiraka is probably more of a, you know, a mind of his own on offense and might get a little bit more creative.
Yeah, I do expect that to be an upgrade.
Their offensive line, is that mostly intact or no?
It is mostly intact. The problem is they were sort of a better version of Michigan State in terms of being a little dinged up across the board and also having a lot of guys who are ideally guards playing tackle. And they ended up firing their O-line coach, Matt Limegrover, who was had been under fire for a little while, but they were not good in pass protection last year, were often disorganized. So I think the main improvement may just come from an upgrade as in coaching here and at least being able to bring back a decent amount of experience, but that line is definitely iffy. It's put Clifford in a decent amount of danger.
And then on defense, they lose Yetur Gross-Matos to the NFL, but they still have Shaka Toney. They have seemingly a never-ending parade of weak side ends who can get to the quarterback. I mean, obviously losing Parsons is a big deal, but I think they return a fair amount of their starters from last year, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah, they bring a lot back, and the guys who are filling in are mostly high-level recruits. Like, I mean, you talk about the parade of edge rushers. They've got an Uche type in Jason Awe, who is actually kind of the top 100 recruit version of Uche coming out of high school. I know Michigan took a look at him, and I love that guy's film. So they might have a pretty ready-made replacement for Gross-Matos on the front seven already.
Yeah, they were playing. I mean, they were replacing a lot of guys, but they were playing a lot of them last year in anticipation of having to play them this year. I don't know what their cornerback situation looks like. They still have Tassel Fields, but they lost John Reed, who's been kind of a stalwart. I don't think that guy barely came off the field. So I think that some of the that other corner position has been kind of a point of consternation in the fan base.
Yeah, so the guy that they thought was going to start, Donovan Johnson, they lost for the year. So their third option there is Keaton Ellis, it looks like.
Who did get on the field a little bit last year as a true freshman.
Yeah, they have like 3 4-star recruits who are lined up behind Johnson if Johnson isn't able to bounce back from that injury. So they might come out pretty
okay. Yeah, they're
deep
at defensive tackle, which angers me a great deal.
they're experienced at safety. They're probably going to end up starting 2 fourth-year players back there.
Yeah, so
including Lamont Wade, who's been pretty good.
I mean,
yeah, Lamont Wade is your standard tiny safety who's just, you know, always there.
I think Clifford just kind of puts a ceiling on this team, though. Like,
I would agree with that, especially without Hamler, who was able to do so much after the catch.
I mean, Freiermuth will be able to make up for some of that because I expect him to be the butt zone guy of the year in the league. But, you know, it just feels like this is going to be a good team, but not one that really challenges Ohio State.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, Shiraka was running an offense that had Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson lined up on the outside last year, and now he's running an offense where the best receivers probably are going to mostly be working out of the slot, and there are big question marks on the outside. So he's probably going to have to change his approach a little bit from what helped make him so successful.
Yeah, speaking of Ohio State, they're also in the conference.
Aren't we out of time?
I mean, is there a point to talking about it? Like, Like, the best hope for the rest of the conference is that Justin Fields gets COVID. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I'm going through these position previews of Michigan's opponents and also including Michigan, and I think Ohio State, I haven't totally fleshed out the defensive ones yet, so don't hold me to this, but I'm pretty sure Ohio State is going to finish at the top of every unit except running back and linebacker.
Well, there you go. That's your Ohio State preview, guys. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to have a gimmicky top five with specific predictions for next season, this season, whatever.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. So hot that it's like my 2-year-old's opinion about zebras.
If you're a Michigan State fan, nothing until basketball season is going to make you happy anyway. Not the Tigers, not the Pistons, not the Lions, not Red Wings draft moves, certainly not your football program. So what should you do? You should be making up a fantasy season and rolling with it as if it's absolutely the only thing happening in the world.
Shout out to Doc Fanson.
All right, this needs to be explained to the less online listeners.
Yeah, this one was for the deeply online.
It's so wonderful, though.
Okay, so the explanation is that there is a blogger for the Only Colors who is writing a very in-depth alternate season as if Michigan State was facing the normal schedule. But it's got, like, it's with, like, play-by-play and fake press conference quotes and, like, it's supposed to be optimistic, but I think Michigan State starts the season 3-2. Like, the, it's just...
But they beat Michigan, and Harbaugh breaks down and blames the refs.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's very fanficky. Except even in Michigan State optimistic fanfiction world, they're still, like, not that great. Which I find delightful. And, yeah, he tweeted, like, a I don't know, something like a 50-tweet thread of basically doing play-by-play of this on Saturday.
It's got memes, too. Fourth quarter grit is like, you know, the t-shirt for Michigan State this year, which they should absolutely make that t-shirt.
And these tweets are getting, like, 2 likes, and at least one of them is an irony like from Michigan
this
fan.
This is the most attention this project has gotten so far, is that Thick Stauskas brought it to our attention, and now...
Yeah, it's been a topic of fascination on Twitter. And now we've brought it to over to the podcast for y'all to enjoy.
Ace, your hottest take.
Ohio State is going to lose a game.
Okay.
I just
after they wanted this season so badly, too.
I mean, it's a really fluky year. Nobody's looked particularly dominant, even the teams that were supposed to look dominant. I mean, Alabama just got out of a pretty wild game with Ole Miss that should not have been that close. And that was without any sort of bizarre happenings with their two deep. So, you know, between really only having one quarterback, it being the COVID season, and just the general bloody-mindedness of college football, I think Ohio State drops a game. I'm not predicting that it is against Michigan. I'm just saying it happens over the course of the 9 games.
No, I'll pick one. It's going to be Nebraska. Because Nebraska was whining so much about having to play Ohio State. Ohio State, it's a long play, man. They're just going to walk in like, okay, these guys already lost to us.
Okay, I'm going
to
amend my prediction. Nebraska's not going to be the team that beats Ohio State. They will drop one of the 8 games that is not against Nebraska.
You guys. All right. My hottest take is this. My hottest take is that Twitter will be more interested in the Big Ten losers game than the championship game.
Oh, that's not even a hot take.
Yeah, that's not hot at all.
Unless Michigan's in it, I'm going to be way more interested in the last place game of the title game.
I guess, I mean, because it's going to be Ohio State laying waste to somebody. But the
Wisconsin
loser game could be anything. It could be Rocky Lombardi versus Hunter Johnson after Peyton Ramsey gets COVID. It could be anything.
If we get a Michigan State Nebraska last place game, I really don't care what else happens this season. I will be content.
I mean, there is the sense that just this, none of this matters. That, like,
it is the most fake season ever.
It never mattered, but it felt like it mattered, and now, like,
it's just been laid so bare. How it matters,
like,
so little.
There's nobody in the stands. You're not going to go like. There's going to be canceled games. There's going to be games where some team has 8 starters out, and it's like, does that even really matter?
If it's Rutgers, and it's going to be Rutgers, the answer
is
no.
Did this game reveal who is the better football program? And meanwhile, I'm like F5-ing 538 for 6 hours a day. It's and like, I feel like I'm going to be like copacetic with whatever happens this year, and then as soon as there's like a 2nd and 10 where they run for 2 yards, I'm gonna be like, oh god damn it. So
yeah, I'm ready to get that feeling again as soon as the ball is kicked off, but this is probably the latest into the off season where it's been like I need to like get up to like have football really move the needle for me right now.
I mean, every Michigan season under Harbaugh, except for 2017, because all the quarterbacks were dead, has had that period when, like, we're making, you know, revenge tour t-shirts. Like, when we're, like, really stoked, and Michigan's, like, actually gotten better than we thought they would be. Like, last year was after the Notre Dame game, right? Like, there's going to be that moment. And I've been...
Oh, the first time Joe Milton hits somebody on like a 75-yard touchdown bomb, I'm running around and declaring that we're making the playoff. But, you know, that's the fun. That's part of the fun of being a fan is you allow your emotions to get into it. And then hopefully you know how to compartmentalize.
Oh, this season just kind of feels like a really long spring practice for 2021 where it
does have a bit of that.
It's amazing. This isn't just apply to football, but like my interest in watching sports has like gone through the floor because there's nobody in the stands. Like I watched the Champions League final and it was just like, whatever.
Yeah, are you getting a cardboard cutout yourself,
no,
by the way, for Michigan Stadium?
But someone else will be purchasing. I'm sure that there will be a photobomb picture somewhere in the stands by someone who thinks they're doing me a favor, but is not.
But they are doing the rest of us a favor, and I strongly encourage them to follow through on it.
I believe there are going to be many murder wolves.
Nice,
yeah, I'm down. I would encourage them to put a murder wolf in every seat. That should have been my hot take. Damn it. Fill the stadium with murder wolves.
This
most intimidating
college
football
atmosphere. We're actually
still
in the hot take segment.
Okay, that's my new hot take. Fill the stadium with murder wolves.
But we're making very specific predictions,
like
which could lead on
segment,
to the new sex segment.
Please purchase Fuego Box products. They'll give you 3 hot sauces every month, chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to MGO blog. Go to fuegobox.com/mgoblog and you'll get $10 off your first month. All right, gimmicky top five time. Our top five is specific predictions about the upcoming season. Seth, you're number 5.
Rashad Bateman is held under 30 yards, but the Gophers strike terror into Michigan because this game gets crazy and stupid because it's the close to Halloween game again.
That sounded like a Fanson tweet.
That did! That's exactly what I thought.
Stay tuned.
This is very specific.
Ace, you're number 4.
5?
You're number 5.
Eric All leads the team in touchdown receptions.
Oh, that is very specific.
I just think, you know, obviously you lose Nico Collins as that just go up and get it guy. I think All is going to take over a bit of that role, especially once you get down near the red zone. Even if Ronnie Bell has positive touchdown regression, you know, it was 1 last year. Yeah. And the slot bugs are more designed for working between the 20s, I would say. So I think there's a pretty big opportunity for All to step in as this oversized slot and especially down in the red zone really give defense problems, especially since he can block. So that doesn't tip what he's doing.
My number 5 is Joe Milton runs for 562 yards.
That's
specific.
Now,
and I like it.
You go back to last year and I've been doing this a lot in preparation for the season preview. And, you know, the overarching theme of the run game is this doesn't work unless the quarterback keeps. And given,
and guess what didn't happen?
And given last year, everybody was vastly overplaying the, 526 yards is the wrong number of yards for 9 games.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
you have to adjust all that.
Dial that back.
Joe Milton runs for 349 yards. That's going to be so difficult. I can't do that. So I think Joe Milton is going to be, he's obviously got the size. He can take some hits. He can fall forward. If he's the starting quarterback, and he was clearly the starting quarterback ahead of Dylan McCaffrey, I have to imagine he's at least in McCaffrey's realm of being able to see that the defensive end is not paying attention to you and going and getting some yards. Also, you can give him some designed runs. I know that Michigan doesn't have a whole lot of quarterback depth, so that's kind of risky, but it just does not work unless the quarterback keeps the ball 5 to 8 times a game. So
yeah, you can't call the game like you're scared.
Right. Also, this year, it's just spring practice, so go get it. Seth, you're number 4.
We find out they've been lying this whole time about the secondary when DJ Turner 2 starts against Minnesota and has 2 picks against Michigan State. En route to another great Michigan cornerback career.
Are these all?
Yeah, this is now a Fanson bit.
This is a bit?
I can stop the bit.
No,
after
it's
this.
Fine. We love our bits. Ace, you're number 4.
Not going to comment on the last sentence. Dax Hill has 4 interceptions. I amended that down from 5 when I realized we're talking about fewer games here.
Yeah, that seems like a lot just to predict for pretty much anybody.
I mean, yeah, which is why I'm going with it. First of all, he made a pretty incredible pick last year where he like came off of the receiver on a deflected ball and dug out a ball that was going to hit the turf, like right before it got there. He's got excellent ball skills. He's going to be, whether he's at safety or gets drafted as the nickel corner, he's going to be in a position to make a lot of plays. And he's the most dynamic safety recruit Michigan has had, if you discount Jabril Peppers, since he didn't ever really play safety, in a very long time.
Trip Wellborn, I guess, is the touchstone that people a little bit older than me have. But yeah, it's going to...
Yeah.
My number four is that the slots are not criminally underused. They are appropriately used, which means...
I like it.
Screens, they get targeted downfield. I think Sainristil will actually get some snaps on the outside, make some catches. And Giles Jackson will be a regular feature. He'll get 30 to 40 carries, 30 to 40 catches, and be a special team stand-up.
Adjusted for nine games.
Yeah, yeah. No, I adjusted that. That's like, what, 30 carries in nine games? It's like, you know, not that much of an ask, especially if you include like some end arounds and stuff like that. So I think this will be like the first time since Steve Breston that the slot receiver is not someone the internet is screaming about being like, give him the ball, because they'll have the ball some. Seth, you're number three.
Michigan and Michigan State will both use their third string quarterbacks for at least a quarter, but in Michigan State's case, it'll be the first quarter.
Okay, I like that one.
All right. Ace, you're number three.
Michigan finishes third the Big Ten in run blocking and general blocking fancy stats.
All right.
Despite only having one returning starter, I think they have what might be the third best line in the conference behind Ohio State and Wisconsin, because Minnesota can't pass block.
Yeah, but they don't ask him to pass block, so
that does mitigate it a little bit. But I also think Michigan has more upside than a Minnesota line that really maybe only has one or two guys who really has an NFL future.
All right. My number three is that Aiden Hutchinson is an early entry and first-round pick after this year. So,
ooh, first-rounder.
I think he's already getting listed there by a few people, and I don't think people fully comprehend what he was asked to do last year does not necessarily encompass his whole skill set. So he's been an arrow straight up ever since he committed to Michigan when he was a three-star who looked spindly. And, you know, he was talking about going to the NFL draft if they didn't have a season. So I think that obviously he's of interest to the NFL, and I think this nine-game spring practice season is going to be enough to prove that he's at least a late first-rounder. Seth, you're number two.
After Penn State loses in Ann Arbor, they make a huge deal about Michigan Stadium abusing the fake noise.
Are they putting fake noise in the stadiums?
I figure they would.
No, they've been pumping those into broadcasts, yeah, but they have not been putting them in the stadiums themselves. So,
I thought they were actually using the loudspeakers. Maybe I just didn't understand what's going on. Well,
just because something didn't happen doesn't mean Penn State fans won't complain about it.
Extremely true.
Ace, number two.
Joe Milton is third team All Big Ten.
What?
I knew I was going to get a reaction out of you from that one.
Justin Fields, Tanner Morgan.
Then who?
Penix.
If Penix cannot get broken for a year, perhaps. But Joe Milton has a lot of the same upside as Penix.
Ramsey, because they're only looking at completion percentage.
Okay, if the coaches in media aren't fools, Joe Milton will be a deserving third team All Big Ten selection.
All right. My number two is Michigan State goes winless. And now this isn't just saying that they're going to lose all their games, because they're so high on the list of this team is going to have like four canceled games. So I'm kind of banking on the Rutgers game getting canceled because it's Michigan State versus Rutgers.
Whether the Situation Trophy gets handed out this year.
Oh, this time you got to like make two of them and give them to both teams. If you get a COVID cancellation for the Situation game, that's a trophy for everybody.
Probably for the best, because otherwise that is a guaranteed super spreader event.
So Rutgers Michigan State gets canceled, and then they lose the rest of their games. That's the take.
Which team do you send to the losers game then?
Oh.
Like if one of them's 0-5 and the other one's 0-7.
Well,
like,
0-7 team, I guess. That's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. All right, Seth, you're number one.
9-0 after God strikes down Ohio State for everything.
This is a season record prediction, we should clarify.
This is our season. Right. Yeah, our that was the rule. Our record prediction had to be in one of these. So 9-0 Michigan after God strikes down Ohio State by, you know, it's been coming for a long time.
Yeah, this is the year that they're struck down. Definitely.
That is fair.
Definitely going to happen this year.
And they wanted football so bad. Remember Ohio State's panic when they all of a sudden realized there wasn't going to be a season this year? It was like, this is the worst thing in the world.
And then they got it because they get everything they want. Yep.
Ace, you're number one.
I am predicting 7-2. I'm including the ninth game in there, I guess, because I do think the East is significantly better than the West again, at least up top. But I do not foresee Michigan beating Ohio State. And between the defensive tackle position, the questions at cornerback, and having a new starter at quarterback who might be a bit erratic, I just have a hard time seeing Michigan getting through unscathed on the pre-Ohio State portion of the schedule, too.
I'm predicting 5-2.
Okay, so you included cancellations which
I just can't see all these games getting played.
Honestly, if I was being more honest with my prediction, I probably would have cut a couple games out of there.
So it's really,
if I was being more honest with my predictions, I would have cut all five of them.
It's true, but it depends on which games don't actually get played. But you know, it's a situation where you look at the Big Ten, and the teams that scare you are Wisconsin, who Michigan plays, Minnesota, who Michigan plays, and then Ohio State. Yes. Penn State, not so much this year, I don't think. Like, they don't have the daggers pointed right at Michigan's weak spots that they did last year. And even that was a close game where it's a whiteout, it's at Penn State. Michigan has an opportunity to tie it, but Ronnie Bell drops the ball. And then you go back to that first half, which had, you know, the push-off from Freiermuth on Hudson. Like, that was a loss, but Penn State gained 283 yards in that game. So they just happened to score on all those drives, and Michigan outgained them by over 100 yards. So,
and Michigan dwarfs a lot of things that they normally would pull in. Like, you have to give Penn State credit. They're going to, like, that KJ Hamler touchdown is going to happen. But the, you know, some of the plays that Michigan missed on are plays that they made the whole rest of the season.
I'll put it this way. There was no shortage of photos to choose from for, like, Penn State offensive line is not good at pass blocking just in our photo library because Sean Clifford was getting rocked that whole game.
So I feel like Michigan should probably be favored in all the divisional games except for Ohio State. And then, you know, Minnesota's a problem. Wisconsin's a problem. I don't think those are out of reach by any means, but just Michigan's defensive tackle situation makes me feel those games are going to be tough.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good break to catch the two best crossover teams and to have them both be power running attacks.
I wouldn't call it a break, Ace.
Whatever. This is just spring practice.
I am
year.
Not conspiratorially minded. And
I mean, I don't.
I take pride.
I don't
in
think
that.
It's a conspiracy to say that they're trying to get Michigan in matchups that they think will appeal for television.
It's not a conspiracy. It makes sense.
Right. So, whatever happens, happens. Let's just make sure there's some hockey.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. If you're wondering what we'll be doing when these games get canceled due to COVID, see Paul Fanson's timeline.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
You beat a Michigan boy!
Also basketball, sure.